right. So tonight, this is class six, I believe, of our foundational teachings series. And this is on the five skandhas, particularly as a tool for studying the emptiness of self, as we would say in Zen, or anatta, not self, as the Buddha would have said. And So we have talked about anatta as one of the characteristics of all conditioned things. And it means that no lasting satisfaction can be found in identifying any of these things as self. Essentially, when we identify as something as self, it means that we feel like we have control over it or some control over it. We want to have control over it, or we feel like we have some kind of influence over it. We want it to be somewhat reliable and constant. And the very nature of things is that they are impermanent. And I recently ran into a wonderful term. So we often say empty, like empty of inherent self nature. Another term is like boundless or boundaryless. We're not actually just independent. But I ran into an interesting one recently, cordless, that we're looking for things to have a core, some kind of something that you could bind and rely on, but that things don't have a core, including us. Doesn't mean we don't exist, right? But there's no little jewel inside that is, incorporates the essence. So on Sunday, I gave a talk on I, Me, and My Making, the elaborate story we tell about reality, kind of put that story on reality, which has its usefulness, those stories. But if we cling to them, we inevitably experience dukkha, which means stress or dis-ease or suffering. So my example Sunday that I used was, say somebody praises me for my podcast. They say, yeah, you have an amazing podcast. So I could tell a story about that. An I story could be like, I am an amazing teacher. I am a great podcaster. I could say in terms of me, in terms of the world around me and the effect it has on me, I could say people love my teaching. And I have, one of mine, I have a successful podcast, which, there may be some truth to those things, but if I'm really invested in those stories, if I really cling to those stories, I'm in for some real suffering if things change, right? If my podcast gets criticized, if people stop listening, a bunch of people decide I'm a terrible teacher, if I get in an accident and I get a brain injury and I can't write anymore. So anyway, the idea is that those stories are unnecessary. And I talk about all that because we've been talking about this kind of study, this practice that we do in order to appreciate this emptiness or boundlessness or corelessness, because when we begin to realize this, we become more liberated from, we're not carrying the burden of those stories around in an unnecessary way. And I talk about that because the five skandhas, which I'm going to define in a moment, are not so much a teaching in and of themselves. Like the Buddha said, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to create a teaching which describes all the components of a human being, and I'm going to break them down to there's this part and this part and this part, and you should learn which part is which and how they're differentiated and all that. It's not that the teaching itself matters so much, but that it is a tool for this deconstructing the self. It's a tool for, as we go through the skandhas, we can recognize that's that part. If I don't identify with that part, I don't identify with that part, or I see how this part is impermanent or changeable. So deconstructing our experience and exploring not self. So this is, I'm going to quote a little bit from the Bhadrakarata Sutta. It's actually quoted from this on Sunday, but a different part, where Buddha explains that during an auspicious day of practice, a monk doesn't dwell on past or future, but sees the present clearly and is not taken in by it. He says further, and how is one not taken in with regard to present qualities? There is the case where a disciple of the noble ones does not see form as self, or self as possessing form, or form as in self, or self as in form. Form meaning our physical body. He or she does not see feeling as self, or self as possessing feeling, or feeling as in self, or self as in feeling. And feeling, as I will talk about in a moment, is very simple in Buddhist terms. It's a bare affective response to what we're experiencing. It's pleasure, it's pain, it's neither pleasure or pain, or maybe somewhere on a spectrum. I think of this as like amoebas have feelings, right? In this sense, they have like, and moving toward and indifference. The enlightened or the noble disciple does not see perception as self, or self as possessing perception, or perception as in self, or self as in perception. He or she does not see mental fabrications as self, or self as possessing fabrications, or fabrications as in self, or self as in fabrications. He or she does not see consciousness as self, or self as possessing consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. This is called not being taken in with regard to present qualities. So to define, I have a little handout. I think I have 11. I think that's will be enough. And then for those of you online, I'm going to insert a link to a Google document with the definitions if you care to be looking at them. You don't have to look at them entirely, although we will later on be going into breakout rooms, and then you might want to be able to refer to them. Does anyone out there need or want a PDF instead of the Google Doc? Just in case, I will paste in. So this is a PDF instead, in case that works better for somebody. All right. So rupa is the name of that first skanda, and it's our physical form, our body. And it's fairly straightforward. So the idea is, so a skanda is a heap, is an aggregate. So the idea is that we are composed, our human self, our live human self is composed of these five. I mean, it's a heap of five heaps. So it's like it's acknowledging that they're not like discrete things necessarily. They're just all these components make up our being. And you can parse them out into these different areas. The second is Vedana, feeling or perception. Like I said, a feeling of pleasure, feeling of pain, a feeling of neither pleasure nor pain. It arises due to contact with things in the world, and is the bare affective quality of an experience, which may be either pleasant, painful, or neutral. And then there is sanya, perception. And there are six kinds of perception. Perception of form, perception of sound, perception of aroma, perception of flavor, the perception of tactile sensation, and the perception of ideas. So this reflects the Buddhist way of viewing us as having six senses, that the mind is an organ that senses thoughts. Six kinds of perception. And I like sutta, what is the result of perception? Perception has expression as its result. However a person perceives something, that is how he expresses it. I have this sort of perception. So then we go on to, so a lot of times in the list, the next thing will be volitional formations, but somehow that doesn't really make sense to me. So I'm going to give you consciousness first. So there's six types of consciousness that based in the eyes, the ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. So it's different from basic perception. And again, I'm not like a scholar in these areas and stuff. So, you know, I may be wrong about like what original Buddhism means or what Theravadins mean or something like that. But my understanding of it, it's subtly different from basic perception, entailing a depth of awareness, reflecting a degree of memory and recognition. And then there is the sankhara, volitional formations. So I was reading about this on the Access to Insight website. Bhikkhu Bodhi describes this word. So san means together, and kara means doing or making. So he says, sankharas are thus co-doings, things that act in concert with other things that are made by a combination of other things. So there's many different ways to translate that, but Bhikkhu Bodhi likes formations or volitional formations. So, and similarly, they can be regarding forms or sounds, smells, taste, tactile objects, and ideas. He says, in later Pali literature, it becomes an umbrella category for all the categories of mind except feeling and perception. Thus, it can include contact, attention, thought, energy, generosity, kindness, wisdom, and all the unwholesome factors such as greed, hate, and delusion. So this is maybe a little hard to grasp. So I decided to make up a little story. Let's say we encounter something. Someone brings us a box and tells us there's a surprise inside. And we're curious and we feel a little excitement mixed with trepidation. What is it? As we slowly, you know, we take the box and we lift the lid. And this is obviously we're using our rupa, we're using our form in order to do this. We see something shiny and red inside. And our experience isn't unpleasant, or like I'm imagining an unpleasant feeling might be like you see a, you know, you're like opening the box, and if you see a tarantula inside, you know, that would be a very unpleasant feeling. If you open the box and you see a giant piece of chocolate cake, you know, might be like, oh, you know, now we're going to get to it, but it's just an apple, right? So you're like, okay. So that's your kind of initial bare affective response to this, what's happening. So that is vedana, or feeling. And as we look at this, look at the object inside this box, we perceive a mostly round shape, tapers a little at one end. There's a little stem at the other end. The red skin has little green flecks. Whole thing is about the size of a fist. Maybe we reach inside and touch the cool skin. Maybe a faint fruity smell wafts out of the box. So all of this data reaching us is sansanya, or perception. And it's just a basic perception. It's not really even to the point where we name what it is that we are seeing. This very basic perception, I imagine, you know, this might be the perception of a child who doesn't have any names or memories or associations with something. It's just experience. Or, you know, they're some folks who have some certain kinds of brain injuries and they just lose that, you know, any association or words for it. So it's just that perception. And none of this can, you know, ordinarily really be teased out. Like, oh, now I'm in perception mode and I am not yet in, you know, but there's purposes for breaking it down like this. So now, from the very beginning of this whole experience, from the time that we've gotten this box and we're going to open it up and we're aware of ourselves, we're aware of the other person, the weight of the box in our hands, maybe the awkwardness of being watched opening a gift, all kinds of things. And at some point we think, it's an apple. So-and-so has given me an apple. So this kind of meta awareness of all these different fields of experience is then vijnana consciousness. And then maybe we think, that's odd. Why would somebody make such a big deal about an apple? Is this a joke? Am I missing something? Maybe we feel a little embarrassed, but we like the person and we don't want to hurt their feelings. So we say, oh, thanks. So all of these reactions and responses and thoughts and emotions and whatever we choose to do then is sankhara, or volitional formations. So as I said, our actual experience isn't a step-by-step affair. Generally speaking, all five skandhas are operating simultaneously and affect each other. So it doesn't matter if you clearly understand the definitions and how exactly they do or don't overlap. The point is to just, you know, use these as tools to kind of drill down into our direct experience of life. So you can imagine people losing part of or all of a particular skandha. Like I said, you know, kind of losing that sense of consciousness and kind of memory and reference and recognition, but still being able to perceive. Maybe, you know, a severe depression might be defined as losing feeling, losing that, like any kind of response of like or dislike or whatever. Or perhaps losing one of our senses and not being able to perceive certain things. So in that light, I was hoping that we would break into five groups. So I think two groups here in the Dirt Zendo and then three in the cloud, and each group will get a skanda. And then that thing that the document I put a link to and that we have in hand, it basically the same question each group will contemplate with respect to their skanda. You know, what does it mean to see the body as self, or self as possessing the body, or the body as being part of the self, or the self as being found in the body? And particularly not talking about these so like kind of theoretically, but trying to come up with an example of each, like one example of each of these, of how that might look. And then choose a secretary to write that down and bring it back. So I've formed the questions slightly differently for each skanda. But before we go off, how about I open it up for clarifying questions? If you're just thinking like, wait, what? Like, if I can assign volitional formations, I'm not sure what that's even going to mean. So. Are we just ready to go then? So somehow, let's see. So can you number or name the breakout rooms, Mick?
Yeah, I've named them the first.
We had some lively discussions here. I don't know if they got lively in the cloud. It's funny because when I, you know, am assigned to these kinds of groups and things, I tend to be somebody who's just like, all right, we got this definition. We got four questions we got to answer. Let's write down the four questions. Like. But most of these sessions don't really go like that. So hopefully we just, you know, you had some interesting conversations and delved into what this might mean and whatever. So it would be lovely to hear a little bit, just a minute or two from each group. So how about form? Do we have a forum secretary, Veronica?
Yes, secretary of forum. It's funny because I said we've been, and I was the same. Oh, all right,
never mind. It's our speaker. So... I turned our speaker off, so we couldn't hear you. Okay,
please sorry. Start again. Can you hear me now?
Now we're good.
I thought we got the easy one, and I was like, oh yeah, we win. This is awesome, and I'll take notes. And then I started regretting it because the questions were actually like really challenging, and the discussion was very interesting. So we tried our best. And what we came up with is four examples. So an example of what it would mean to see the body as self would be if you really identified with your body. So say you're like a professional athlete and like your body is yourself. It's like your main, most important thing. The second thing was, what would it mean to see the self as possessing the body? So an example of that might be that you think that you like own your body, and maybe if you had to lose a limb or something, that would be really upsetting because you were like, hey, that's my body. I own that. That's, you know what I mean? You're it's more about possessing it. A third one is, what if you thought of the body as part of the self? So we thought that would be like, if you thought, well, I'm me, I have my body, I have my personality, I have my family, I have my emotions. And when you tie all those up with a little bow, like that's myself. So it's not like the not self, but you think that there's all these parts. And then the fourth one was, what would be an example of the self as being found in the body? So that would be maybe if you thought that there is a self inside of your physical body. And so that would maybe match like a concept of reincarnation or something. There's a self inside of me, and maybe that self can go be inside of a different body, but there's still. So that was an example of maybe that. And yeah. Anyway, we tried. That's what we came up with.
That's great. Feeling.
So feeling sensations. First, we kind of try to get our hands around what these sensations are. And we just figured like light, you know, the pain part of light might be seeing something too bright. Sensation of sound, you might have like a good chord or something discordant. I hear a screech, might be painful, something too loud. tastes like sweet, touches, hot, cold, soft. Anyway, getting around that. So we started focusing on pain, I guess, and what might be painful. And, you know, the one example is like a chronic back pain. I mean, you're feeling a pain and it's like, well, when you start to ask the question, you know, does this, you know, light or is this sound part of me? That's kind of easy. You don't think of a lot of the sensations as part of you necessarily. But when you think of pain, you know, what kind of pain is part of you? Like a chronic back pain becomes part of your narrative, whatever. And so I think when you're feeling that pain, you've gotten to a point where you're identifying with it. You know, there's some higher level conceptions related to the pain, your lack of mobility, all that kind of stuff. But I don't think that's quite in the sensation category. But I think a lot of people, when they have some kind of arthritis or something, they start to feel that pain as part of themselves. And you know, I don't know, maybe if you're hearing yourself, I don't know if that, you know, the sound I'm hearing is kind of part of myself, I'm creating it, but maybe that gets into some higher level conceptions, but, whatever. Anyway, so we kicked that around, but we didn't come to any grand conclusions.
Great. Well, and it is important to just differentiate between sensations like sounds and sights and smells and stuff, which is really would fall more under perception. Whereas this feeling or the sensation, it's just this basic like, dislike, indifference, attraction, aversion, neutrality. You know, but I think you, as you were pointing out, there's like, you know, why is a certain sound lovely and a certain sound is, ugh. And, you know, I think it's, for me anyway, I am deeply identified with those primal, like, dislike, neutrality, right? This is like, this is me who does not like that. This is me who would really like that. You know, it seems pretty basic, and to kind of think that that's not self, that's just something that arises, it's a challenge. How about perception?
I guess that was us. I'm not sure how much we nailed the questions part of so much of just sort of discussing. So the rest of my group can hop in if they have sort of ways of bringing this more towards the questions. But we were talking about perception, and we kind of started with the idea that, like, in Mick brought up the idea of, like, Descartes' I think, therefore I am, and in the sense that in Western thought, we don't really think much about, like, we blow past who is doing the perceiving. It's just that, you know, because I think, therefore I am, but we don't even really get into sort of what that means. It's just sort of a given. We just sort of bounce right past it with no matter what we're sort of perceiving, be it thoughts or whatever. Ruth Ann shared a story of she was listening to an interview maybe today on the radio, about sort of the way we perceive objects and identify, and therefore kind of identify with them as self. She's story of a person introducing a student to the Dalai Lama, and referred to them as my student. And the Dalai Lama kind of immediately leaned into them a little bit about not using my in this sort of instance. So even, you know, when we perceive things that are definitely not ourself, we still attach them to us. Mm-hmm. Gatha was talking about sort of pure perception as sort of happening before understanding the self, and Gath will jump in if I'm confusing this a little bit, but we can perceive all sorts of things in sort of a big open way without attaching our history to it. And we talked a little bit about how that's sort of the perception piece there is like sort of before we're putting all of our history and our thoughts and our feelings about whatever it is we're perceiving into it. And then maybe at the basic level, that's sort of what, we're moving towards if you had the idea of enlightenment, of pure perception, of being able to be a part of something without putting your history into it, or your feelings or expressions or whatever, or your, yeah, they're putting you into it and how we do that. So let's say we got a little big in our thinking, in what we kind of chatted about. And anyone else in the group, if I muddled anything up, please feel free to hop in, because I was just madly typing throughout the throughout our conversation.
Thank you. I think as I'm going through these about if we start to identify a particular skanda as self, or as our self being in it or whatever, I mean, essentially what that means, right, is we're going to be very concerned about it. We're going to get kind of obsessed with it. We're going to get attached to it. So, I mean, I could be, like I said, a little off on the exact definitions and parsing out here, but when I think of somebody being really identified with their perceptions, I guess I'm kind of thinking of like kind of experience junkies and kind of pleasure junkies who just, you know, just to experience and to see and to taste and to, you know, all of these things as being just very central to their identity and stuff, right? Which means, of course, if we don't have the opportunity to do those things, then our sense of self is threatened. All right, consciousness. We have a consciousness spokesperson.
It seems like a really tough one.
Yeah.
We're pretty proud of our conversation.
Do you want to come over to the...
Sure. Let's see. I felt like the thing that I said was... No, should I face the camera? Should I face? Yeah. I don't know.
That's fine.
I very much identify myself as a thinking mind that possesses five material senses. Right? They are my subjective experience, and so, you know, I'm very familiar with what it is for a self to possess five other consciousnesses and be the sixth one. Right. And following your framework, what would a person who over identifies with that be like? I can answer that. that person would take their subjective perceptions as being reality, as being themselves, and that person would likely try to police their thoughts a lot in an attempt to control themselves.
Yes. Thank you. I also, I mean, I think we're all probably attached to all the skandhas, but I do think I'm particularly attached to consciousness, like that thread, that awareness that, you know, we kind of, that meta awareness we put over everything. And essentially, you know, like encountering the Buddhist idea of mindfulness and being really present in the here and now and trying to remain present in the here and now and all that, to me sounds like yes, super consciousness, right? Like nonstop, unbroken, pure consciousness. Like I will never die. Like I'm just like, and yet the actually experience of consciousness shifts and changes, and we can't actually control it or grasp it in the way that we think we might be able to. I mean, we can do things that influence how our minds tend to go, but it's not that kind of thing that can be grasped. We have to go to sleep sometimes, you know, we get tired as things change. So, but it could, you know, my lack of ability to remain mindful all the time was very distressing. So that's an example of being very identified with your consciousness. I'm sure not the only way. Volitional formations.
uh,
All right. So I don't know that we quite answered these questions, but the ideas that we came up with were having to do with politics and family and relational dynamics. So politically, one might identify as a Republican and another as a Democrat, and we attach ideas to each person automatically. So you're a Democrat, therefore you think this way. You're a Republican, therefore you think this way. Is there any truth behind that? There's Republicans that are not exactly how you think of them, and vice versa with Democrats. And the same thing with family dynamics. People, when they're having a relationship with somebody, they say, that person did that on purpose. But did they really? Or is that a story you're telling yourself? There's the data, what is happening. Mm-hmm. And then there's the story that you write about that data and your interpretation of that, when that might not be factual. So anyways, that's what we came up with.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, your skanda was hardest and easiest, in the sense that there's just an infinite list of volitional formations we see as being us. I mean, come on, to be compassionate. I am compassionate. Like that is a volitional formation. It's a good one. It's a nice one. But it really gets at this larger question as to why is it problematic to identify with the skandhas? Most people just live their lives within the skandhas and identifying different parts. And there's a great description of how it's not like maybe if I'm really attached to my consciousness, I'm always walking around, I over-identified with that skanda. It's, our sense of self shifts based on context. And, if I'm in pain now, all of a sudden, that's a pain that belongs to the self, or I'm really concerned about my body, whatever. Our attention and our concern shifts. But it's really all of this describes our experience, parses our experience down in a particular way. And there might be other lists and other ways to describe experience. And these are a 2,500-year-old list and probably modern neurobiology probably could parse our functioning down in a different way. But it really doesn't matter so much. Point is that we imagine there to be something within these skandhas, within all of them or within a particular one, that is essentially us. And therefore, we are very concerned about the well-being of these skandhas, about our pursuit of pleasure, our avoidance of pain, the protection of our opinions, all of these things we're going to be very wrapped up in. So when we use the skandhas as a tool, we look very closely at as I was saying, that example of consciousness, and to notice, I'm very distressed when I have this sense that I've lost mindfulness. I've lost a certain kind of consciousness that I really identify with. Self-consciousness, my sense of I am being mindful now. That's me. That's me. That's me. These other kinds of consciousness aren't me. That's me. But then I lose mindfulness for a few hours. And then I get mindful again. I'm like, uh-oh. What just happened? What just happened to me? I wasn't here. So we can look closely at those areas where we are attached and kind of hone in on them, right? And you can recognize, I'm really, identifying the self with my body, or I'm really identifying myself with my with my basic feelings, right? I don't like, I do like, I want that, I don't want that, I'm indifferent about that. Well, you're not usually upset about the stuff we're indifferent at. I'm very identified with my perceptions. I'm really, you know, just seek after all these wonderful, pleasurable perceptions, and my perceptions of the world are inherently true or real. Obviously, the many ways we can be attached to our volitional formations. I'm really attached to this, my intention to do something nice for this person, and they don't understand. And you can recognize whenever we're starting to feel dukkha, whenever we're starting to feel distress, you know, what is it that I am really identifying with here? And then we look really closely. If you look really, really, really closely, it's like we find out there's essentially no unchanging core there. There's no, there's nothing to be grasped. There's nothing inherently real there. So that's what the recommendation is just to kind of go more deeply to deconstruct the self and notice how these things really are. Notice, you know, opinions. You might have an opinion of someone and you're just like, yes. And then you might notice, oh, now they just explained why they did what they did. And it sounds like a good excuse to you. So now you're good. Like, well, where did the anger go? Where did your, you know, stalwart position go? And if we really pay attention, we notice that these things just change, and they're not actually something we can hold on to or identify with. And we find out that that's okay, that we don't have to, that actually we can function without that. So I hope that was a fun intro to the Five Skandhas. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.